Today, let's talk financial advising, retirement and tax strategy. Where do you put your money? The good, the bad, and the ugly. Because today will help you build your legacy with the fire on the wall.
Everybody to another episode of Fly on the Wall Finance. I'm your host, Jamie Malm. And with me again, I think this is episode number two for us, is William Nusser. He is the owner of Simmons and Simmons. He is our resident tax expert. Hi, William.
Hello. How are we doing?
Good. We were joking that we were calling this the tax hangover episode because it's that time of year, right? We all kind of feel, especially you probably, like we've got a bit of a tax hangover.
Yeah. We joke that the air is fresher, the sun is brighter, you know, like it just feels like it's a whole new world out there. So you actually see the sun, which is nice when you're outside.
Yeah. Well, for those of us that don't totally immerse ourselves in tax season, I think, and I could be wrong, but I thought what we could talk about today is a lot of people file their taxes and then I'm done, right? Whew, made it through, filed my taxes. I don't have to think about that now again for another year. But this is actually the time where if we were going to be proactive, this is the time where smart planning starts, right?
Yeah, correct. You know, you want to kind of look at and see where you fell this year. Were you happy with that? Is there some ideas there? You know, I've just talked to a client the other day, like on deferred compensation pieces. There's a lot of employers out there, especially when you get to higher earners, that you can defer some compensation. Let's say you don't like your tax brackets where you're at today, but you want to start to build a little bit more of a nest egg. Then you can kind of look at those pieces and see. So you got to start looking at what upper brackets did I get into? You know, where was I at in my tax position? And then at that point, you're asking yourself, was my time and effort worth it? Because I'm losing this much to taxes. So you start having that discussion of, was the extra time I put in worth it? Because I'm only retaining this much. Generally speaking, always you're going to end up with more money, the more money you make. But the government starts to take a larger percentage. So that's where the discussion comes in. Was it worth it? You know, so if the government's going to come in and you start getting those upper incomes, 37% federal, 5% state. So 42% of your money is income tax plus Medicare. So we're starting to get 45, 48%. Is 50 cents on the dollar worth it for that extra income? Or would you rather defer some or look at some other options to potentially move those monies elsewhere to try to get that into a lower number into the future?
It's such a good point because we work so hard to try to, you know, maximize income and get the biggest bang for our buck, so to speak. And we forget to think about, well, how did that all play out for me at the end? I file my taxes, maybe I don't look at it again. And I think that's the cycle people fall into where they have maybe a CPA or a tax professional. And really all that person is doing is recording history rather than helping them plan for, all right, let's look at my tax return this year almost as like a financial report card.
Yep.
What can I learn from it? And are there things that I can change now for next year to improve my situation?
And I think a big piece that they have is, you know, also understanding what you used on your return and potentially, am I going to have that into the future? Because there could be an effect, even if you change nothing income wise. Let's say you got a kid that's 16 years old, and then he's turning 17 in 2026. Well, that credit now is going from $2,200 to $500. So if you do nothing different, you're going to have a $1,700 difference on the return. If you had a $2,800 refund, now you're still going to get a refund. But if you got an $1,100 refund, well, now you're going to owe $600. So making sure you're reviewing that age of kids, if you got college age kids, making sure you're looking at dependencies and what they're looking at. If you got kids graduating in May, both in high school and in college, what does that look like? Because there's rules of half support, have to live with you half the year. Are they still going to be a dependent in the next year? And just trying to make sure you're pre-planning that as much as possible so there is no surprises. That's a lot of the goal that we have was one of the most prideful things, I guess, when clients tell me, especially a new client that comes in and goes, man, I have never enjoyed going to do my taxes. I have dreaded this. I hate this. I hated like going in. Now I look forward to seeing you. And that's what we want. We want to create that atmosphere with that appointment. It's something something we got to deal with, right? Taxes, insurance, death. That's all the things that they say you can't avoid. But we don't want to make that tax appointment where you're sitting there sweating bullets, not knowing where you're at. You're stressed out where you're at. You want to know where you're at. You want to enjoy, get a recap. Make sure we're planning for your future and going through there. So that's something that we really strive for as a firm, to not make tax season a negative effect, yes, we have taxes, but to make sure that we feel good about it, we know where we're at. So
I would say if I had not heard that feedback for myself, I would call BS on that. Yeah. Nobody is going to say, I so enjoy coming to talk to you about taxes. However, I just had somebody hug me when they walked out of your office the other day to yeah. thank me for introducing them to you, and said, literally, this is something that I would dread all year. And it was just so frustrating and it was confusing and I didn't really understand. And it just felt like totally out of my control. And he said, that's totally changed. And he hugged me and said, he's fantastic. And I said, yeah, I know. You guys really do such a phenomenal job. You and Caitlin, who own the firm together, you are in our office at least once a month. You provide the tax planning services for our clients. And then of course you're based out of Larned and have your own office there. But it really is that proactive planning. And I think the cohesiveness of having your financial advisor and your tax person really working in synergy, that is a game changer for what kind of opportunities come up and how you can be proactive.
Yeah, especially the capital gains, you know, the market sees a lot of movements. You want to make sure good or bad of what market's doing, that we're making sure we're doing best for your tax position, especially when it's in a good area that we're not surprised and that we got some planning points. So I love when you just send me a little email that says, hey, I'm getting ready. This person's got this capital gain that we're potentially going to take here. What does that look like? And then the more we can articulate, because a lot of times, especially when we look at single accounts, non-qualified money, they're not really touching the money, right? So we have these capital gains that stay in the account. So making sure that we're communicative as much as possible. What we don't want is we get here with any major surprises. So that's what we just really work for. That if we have those components, or there's areas that I know we went through, someone's like, well, I think we can keep in the 0% federal rate, you know, and just trying to work through how much can we take this year. Those are the best planning points. You say, hey, they're looking at doing a little bit of a sale. Maybe we can split some in December and January. What can we take to keep the taxes lower? And that's the goal. You know, I mean, our goal is, and it's like, you know, let's say we have an estimated tax bill or something like that. Somebody's like, it's $600. I'm like, man, I work all day long trying to save $10, $20, $30. Every dollar of tax we can save, I think, is a win, you know? So that's our goal, really, to go through there and try to be as efficient with our tax planning as possible.
Yeah. One of the scenarios that you just talked about, I want to come back to it, make sure that that wasn't just glossed over, but having the ability for me to be able to look in the account and say, okay, I see some opportunity here, maybe to do some tax loss harvesting, or we can get them out of a position that has not served them well. But the last thing I want to do is make a recommendation that, well, great, I got you great returns, but you ended up paying half of it back in taxes. Yeah. How do we make that most tax efficient? If you're their tax preparer, for me to be able to say, should I split this over 2 years? How much do you foresee their situation changing this year? If I were going to sell this position, can we do that and still, like you said, keep them in the 0% capital gains tax bracket? That's a huge differentiator from the way that most people are used to working, which is just like, well, it already happened. Yeah. And I guess I just now have to live with the consequences, and I don't really understand why or how I can do anything about it. That would be very frustrating for the consumer.
Oh, yeah. And then, and also on our side, you know, what we enjoy working with you guys is on, that's not the message we want to tell the client too when it's March 15th. You know, those are sometimes in our industry, you know, when I first started, you're getting a lot of bad news sometimes. So when you have those large capital gains and they're unexpected for them, and then they say, hey, and then there's some confusion because the way that market, like accounts are reported on non-qualified, it's showing what market rate is right now, right? It's not telling what your cost basis is. So when somebody says, well, I didn't see a $100,000 gain in my account, it's like, well, it's a cumulative from when you invested till now. They're like, yeah, but my account didn't change. I'm like, yes, because it's already captured in that number you're looking at. You're not looking at the cost base. So I think it's an important. Yeah, I think it's a great thing too for looking at your tax return, but also on your logging into your Schwab accounts and looking there and saying, what are my unrealized gains? And looking at that and understanding, hey, that tax piece is kind of out there still.
Yeah, we just had a new potential person, a client come in, and they said, you know, I'm really confused. The person I'm working with now is trying to explain to me that even though I didn't take any income, I own this mutual fund and it generated something within the fund, and that somehow created taxes for me. And you could tell they were just so confused about, if I didn't ask for this, why am I paying taxes on something that I didn't actually take? That clarity around how you gain control of that is huge for people. So let's talk about some things that you see. You just touched on it, some changes that might be happening with a 16-year-old turning 17, somebody that's graduating. What are some of the biggest things that you see people miss, little things like that, that they're just not expecting.
Yeah, the child tax credit laws are very interesting. So when we talk about child tax credit, that's the under 17. And so that is basically birth to under 17. Well, the way the law is written, it's under 17. So when the parent, you're a senior in high school, expenses are the most. You got senior photos, mm-hmm. prom, travel, all this stuff you got going on. And then they cut the tax credit. So it's just a weird timing. Yeah, and people are always surprised on that. Like, what? Yeah. My kid's a senior and I'm like, the credit isn't as much. And there's just this 1 year gap that when they're the year they turn 17, because the law is written under 17. They just had another deal with a college age dependent. And then the law is written under 24. Well, the kid turned 24. Well, now we're not eligible. Well, so they turned mm-hmm. 17. So we're always looking at that and trying to see like, hey, and the benefit is that is the benefit of the appointment or knowing the client, having going through what we really focus on here is that my clients are my clients. Caitlin's are hers. Chris is theirs. We don't have crossovers. So you can learn and know the client. You're watching that and saying, hey, I think they got a kid in high school. And you start kind of figuring out, you're like, hey, how long until they're 17? And so, yeah, those scenarios are the ones that definitely are the biggest because they're credits. So what credits means they're dollar for dollar. So if that credit goes from $2,200 to $500, it's $1,700 different cash on the return. So
yeah, that's a big difference.
Yeah, that's going to directly reflect back to your bank account. So that's super critical that we try to communicate that as far away as we can, because sometimes it requires a withholding adjustment. And usually families are fairly tight in age, right? We're going to have a kid that's 18 months to 13 months behind their sibling. Well, you get this run if you got three or four kids. Well, now I'm 1700 difference. And then another 18 months, I'm 1700 distant. And then it can be a little bit rough when those things start kind of coming through of what that affects your tax position. Because you get a couple kids within 2 years, you could be a $3,500 difference on your tax return, which then is going to change into withholding difference generally on the W-2, unless you get some college credits to kind of offset that temporary time. But then the parents aren't feeling that great about it because college is even more expensive, you know? Right. So those are things that we try to work people through. And then in addition to that, our program does a great job when you're trying to fill out those FAFSA forms or going through there, we can add those little tickers where they can print out the FAFSA information. So you're ready when you even go to get your college applications.
That's such a point of confusion, I think, for people is the FAFSA and how can you maybe help make that as beneficial as possible from, you know, an aid standpoint and what are some adjustments that can be made. So really important piece of the picture there. The other thing that I think we're getting asked a lot about is we're talking about kids and tax credits, Trump accounts. That was a new thing this year. So tell me what you guys are doing, because I know the first step in the process is filing a form with your tax accountant.
Yeah, yeah. You got to file an IRS form. You can do them online or we have a paper form too. You can go through that. You got to kind of basically register to sign up for it. It's not a where they're going to do it for you on your behalf. If you want the federal government to put in that $1,000, you have to sign up for the Trump account. So that is something important that you're doing. And then you continue to contribute. But if you're looking for that initial $1,000, definitely reach out. If you've had a child within the time frame there or you're not certain about eligibility, just touch base and we can kind of guide you on that piece of where to go.
Yeah, we are getting a lot of questions. And I know there's some unknown pieces and they're not quite ready yet. They're coming, I think, slated for July 4th of this year. Yep. So first step is if you think you qualify or you know you do and you want to get started, you got to file that form.
Yep.
Like you said, you can do it online or come to us. We can help you if you're somebody that we're already working with. We can point you in the right direction.
Yeah. And I think what you'll see is a little very similar to when like Simple Roth came out. It was something that, yes, Congress passed it. It's eligible this date. But then the implementation on the back end for the brokerages and those takes some time. So I think you're going to see the similar thing with the Trump account that you want to make sure you're getting your name on that list and going. But it's not something I'm expecting to be extremely expedient. Both on brokerage side and IRS, when the IRS is very delayed today. So adding more that they're managing, I think there's going to be a little bit of initial frustration as people try to figure out what that looks like, what eligibility, what kind of tax planning points can it be, or even contribution points for the families into the future, because it is something you can continue to fund after the thousand.
Right.
So that's going to be interesting to kind of see what value people see there. It's got a little bit of a taste of kind of a mix between a 529 and a Roth is what it feels like, but you're not dealing with earned income. Which is kind of neat on that side versus what the Roth you always deal with. They have to have earned income. So I think it's going to kind of have a mix from a planning point there. But the ability to invest early, especially when you're talking about a birth, is going to carry a lot for that individual, especially when they get to retirement years.
I think it's fun too, to see how excited kids get about, wait a minute, so you're telling me if I put in $25 a month for X amount, I can have $1 million when I go retire. Yeah. You know, I know my kids, when they got to the age of which they could get an allowance, I said, well, good news guys, you're getting $25 a week, except it's not going to go to you to waste on McDonald's and Dairy Queen. It's actually going into your Roth account. And at first they were like, oh, you know, we don't want that. Yeah. Until I showed them, okay, but look, if I put this in, you do some work in the summer, because of course, like you said, you have to have earned income. Yep. So you do some work in the summer, you mow lawns, you babysit, you do all the things that kids do, and we pay you for that. Look at what your account can grow. Same type of thing with these Trump accounts. It's the importance of the early seed money and what that can grow to. So I'm just excited to see, you know, more families start really looking at how do we start saving and setting our kids up for success.
Yeah. And I would definitely say, you know, they joke in the, when we go to tax school, that only half the country is going to participate in these accounts. But I would say, regardless of your political beliefs, if you had a kid, sign up for it. I mean, I know the name of the account is the Trump account, but just sign up for it. I mean, it's just foolish to walk away. I mean, it's $1,000. I mean, it's there. Don't do it because you don't like the name of it, you know.
So just call it something else to yourselves or to your family if you don't like the name of it. But it's a great opportunity. So okay, let's talk about celebrating the big refund, right? I hear especially maybe younger people talk about this. Like, I'm so excited, I got, you know, big refund back. And initially I think people think, oh, that's wonderful, that means my accountant did a good job. What does it really mean?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. In our industry, I always joke that you're judged upon the size of the refund, which in essence, to some theory, we can get you the best we will, but we have no control of that, right? Right. And so if somebody withholds 10 times X of what their tax was, you're going to have a massive refund. It used to be when we had the old W-4, Kevin Joe used to joke, a single zero plus 1,000, you know, and then that makes sure that we can get you a refund, you know. Right. So, but that's not great planning either. But you're judged a lot on that. Hey, my last guy got me this. It's like, well, there's really some of the scenarios that change. Maybe you sold something, you didn't have the income this year, you did once last year, so maybe it looks easier, but necessarily that's not the answer. What we really focus on firm-wise is that your return is prepared accurately. On the refund side, it really varies, you know? So if you're a W-2 wage earner and you're getting that money back that's yours, then we always have that discussion of like, hey, this refund started, maybe you and your wife were both working, we were single withholding, well, now we've had a couple of kids, well, now we're kind of over withheld, and that's really your money that you've let the government hold. And so we try to make sure you use that appointment time, or even when we're done with the return, to communicate and say, hey, how do you feel about that? Are you okay with it? Some people have some seniors that like to kind of withhold their Social Security, and they use that to pay the second half of their taxes. It's great. So it's all the way across the board of what is best. And some people are the, I don't want to be dead even, or I want to owe a little, I don't want them holding my dollars for 1 second. And I think you got to let people, we let the clients kind of drive where they want to be, but then we can use that point and communicate, say, hey, where's your refund? If it's with this large refund and month to month, we're really tight, right? And we're using maybe credit cards, or we're accumulating debt, we're using those refunds to pay off that debt. That's not working for you. That's costing you more. So there's also that dynamic. And we've adjusted before. We've pulled back some withholding to make sure that month to month, as especially here in the last, I would say 18 months, definitely in the last 3 or 4 with the fuel prices there, that the month to month is really critical right now for everybody. So we're just trying to make sure that we can balance the month to month monies and expenses, also with our tax position, where we don't want to owe a bunch at the end, but we also don't want to get a bunch back if you're trying to make sure month to month you need a little bit more.
Yeah, it's definitely a balance. That's right. Mm-hmm. So if you get a bunch back at the end, maybe that's what you want. Like you said, maybe you like having that. There's something you intend on, but essentially, you just let somebody else use your money all year, right? That you could have been using for something else. So I think there's maybe some education around, is a big refund always the best thing? Or should I have adjusted something so I could have used that money all year? That was a confusing point, I know, for Emma, my daughter, when she first started working. She was like, wait a minute, so what am I trying to figure out here? Don't I want a big refund at the end of the year? And I said, well, I guess you have to decide, you know, do you have the money that you want to use all year? Or do you just like knowing you're going to get a big amount back at the end? Yeah. And it can be kind of confusing. So,
And I think a critical point is, anytime you change an employer, anytime your employer changes, maybe an accounting software they're using, really watching those, and it's hard today with direct deposit, watching those pay stubs. And more often than not, if we have a withholding problem, it's because someone took a job change during the middle of the year. And we always want our clients to reach out. Hey, if you take a job change, let's make sure we're communicating on how that W-4 is done. And probably the biggest one we see is if you've got pretty good wage earners, married couple, and they both fill out married on that W-4, you are likely going to be under withheld. And what I mean by that is when they're filling out married, in my belief over time, it's evolved to if you're filling out married that you're claiming your spouse and you're claiming your spouse is not working. And traditionally today that is in the setting. So once we start getting to even when you're getting to 60, 80 each, and we don't really have a lot of dependents maybe out there, you need to start thinking about doing single on that W-4, because if not, your withholding starts to get pretty light. So the new W-4s are way more complicated than they used to be. So that's something we also want to be a resource, not just during tax season, but when you have the change. But if you're doing a job change or there's a life event change when you have a kid, communicate with that. Get that there so you're ready, versus you get to the end of the year and then you're under withheld. I had one this year that they were working a job. It wasn't much. Changed jobs. A lot more income and no withholding.
Yeah.
So it was like a $47,000 W-2 with like $1,400 federal. Well, we end up owing a bunch of money. Well, just the way the year worked out, we didn't have the money come April 15th. So that makes it a very difficult scenario.
Especially if you're not expecting it. You didn't think about it. You didn't plan for it. You didn't make those adjustments along the way. So life changes is the main thing, right?
Yeah.
Job changes, marriage, child, anything that is altered something. But that's a good point too. I wouldn't have thought about why married would have made you not withhold enough. You would think, you know, most people fill it out, they're just like, well, I'm married, so
and they're really nervous, like, I'm married, I don't want to mark single, I don't want to lie on this. Well, really, that form's just staying with your employer. That's just telling them how to withhold your W-2. Nothing like that goes to the IRS, and it would be okay. They had like that married at a single rate, but today it's just way more complicated than they have, where you can claim the credits now in the W-4. So somebody goes in there and they go, well, I have four kids and well, those tax credits that you're relying on your return to get your taxes done, you have taken those credits now and you're withholding on your W-2. So they've reduced your withholding. And then now that refund that you once used to get, you may owe or maybe closer to even, because you've already basically taken the value of the credits, which is okay. Everyone has a different preference. I remember there was a talk show guy once, and it was the prior administration, and the guy says, what do you mean I can't have larger net paycheck and get a bigger refund? Like, those aren't tied together. Like, those are completely separate. Either you're going to get a bigger net paycheck or it's going to be potentially get more payment on the refund there. So, so working through that balance, it's really important, especially job changes. Like, anytime an employer or client brings in two W-2s, oh, I changed jobs, I always kind of hold my breath. A good safe harbor if you're, let's say, 200,000 and below AGI or combined income, looking at 10% federal, 5% state on the withholding. So when you look at your net paycheck, kind of look at what the gross pay was, about 10% federal, 5 state, or the federal should be about twice as much as the state. That gives you at least some idea that you're in the right ballpark. But when we see the state greater than the federal, that's when we see usually problems arise.
So what would you say the biggest missed opportunities are? And I know that's probably all over the place because everybody's situation is different, but what are the most common, the things that people miss, they don't look at, they miss out on, they don't go back and review, so they don't change it for the next year. Is there something that you see come up again and again?
You got to kind of think on the side there. Obviously, when you get to your business side, and even some form of self-employment, that's where you see the biggest areas, even on the side. I always tell you, my goal is the best deductions are capturing the expenses that are already occurring. If all my tax planning points are about, hey, you need to go spend, that's not really that great for you. It's about the ideas that your cell phones and your vehicle usage and those, trying to make sure we're capturing what the business usage is and getting that deduction and a value for you. Self-employed health insurance deduction is a critical one, especially if you got somebody that's on Medicare. They don't really think about that idea that kind of comes through. And as it works through, then when you're in S-corps and that piece, that gets very complicated. So planning is almost hypercritical when you look at wage base and those pieces. On the individual side, just making sure and understanding the tax law. I had a guy the other day said, I didn't know taxes, but you really don't know. You know, are you printing a return and have a copy? Maybe, generally not. They don't even have a copy if you get a client that was self-prepared. So that's another thing that we're pretty big on. If you're going to do your own, at least at minimum, download a PDF of your return. Because what happens is you go back to log in, you don't get your login, you don't know where it's at. And if somebody's requesting that, as a bank or a lender needs a copy of your return, you can't obtain it. That's what's always funny. Anytime in our life we've done lending, they have these long closing periods, right? They want closing periods on house to be like 90 days. Well, I can gather the information literally in 45 minutes for what they need. We usually close within 10 or 15 days because it's readily available, but people that gather their tax documents is sometimes hypercritical. So even after you're done filing, it's all said and done, making sure that you've got your stuff filed and organized. The benefit with our firm is that we're keeping the portal, we're keeping our side here. So if you ever need a copy of return, your W-2s or anything of those, we're scanning those in electronically and have them backed up for you. So that's kind of one of the unwritten benefits of the firm. If you need to send a copy of your return to a bank or go through, you just call us and we send it for you. It's in PDF form. It's super nice. The banks prefer it in that way. So there's other benefits to just the preparation.
Let's go back to something you talked about, which would be business owners, self-employed people. They obviously have a little more leeway with how to take advantage of potential deductions than just like a, you know, an employee, a W-2 employee. Yep. So let's talk specifically about business owners for a minute. Is there something that you would suggest this time of year? I own a business. I got my return back. What are some of the things that I should now be looking for or starting to plan for next year? So I get myself in a position to make sure that, like you said, I'm taking advantage of the things I'm already spending money on instead of just at the end of the year, oh, now I got to go spend money or I got to lose it to taxes.
Yeah. Yeah. A big thing when we want to look at the business side too, and in addition to taxes, which is very important, but we talk about business planning and profitability and wealth generation. So that focuses really like from this point, probably through the next 9 months, somewhere in that window, as before we get to like that November, December, it's a lot about looking at profitability, comparable where we were last year. How is revenue looking? You know, what we saw in 2025 was pretty standard. And I'm talking across from restaurants to healthcare industry there that my cost of goods and products went up, but then my buyer's ability to pay more is starting to kind of soften. So my gross profit percentage is starting to get flatter. So how are we going to be as profitable or as efficient as a business owner during certain economic times? And especially in the rental market, seeing the same thing. If you've got a lot of rental houses in those pieces with property tax and insurance increases, the rent kind of seems like we're hitting a little bit of a ceiling because people are just, their wage base hasn't followed what we've seen in the last 4 years. So that net profitability started getting a little bit less. So how can we look out? Where are my terms and my loans? So there's a lot greater discussions that I have with my business clients that it's about everything, you know? And I think one of the resources I like to have, and one I consider really a lot of my clients, my friends, you know, just because we're communicating so much, it seems like we're close friends, you know, and we are. I mean, I want to see their success. That's something I really enjoy with my job. But an important piece is I think we see is small business owners. So I'm talking about husband and wife owning a business. And let's say we have 5 to 10 employees. A lot of times those business owners are out on an island by themselves, that they're responsible to make all the decisions for this business. And they really don't have that kind of person to throw an idea off of or kind of communicate how they're feeling or what's going on. So that's what we try to be, you know, with my clients to kind of go through. We can kind of talk through. We've seen a lot, you know, the benefit is what we have here is we can kind of connect a lot of really good entrepreneurs together through our firm by saying, hey, this is, I have some guys that are working on this, especially in the ag world, that we can kind of say, hey, this is what some other guys I've seen have done that looks like it's working for them. Maybe we potentially look at their either styles of financing or equipment acquisition and kind of working through that. And then in the industry, it's just important to know where you're at. So making sure you're watching that profitability running year to date through June. And where was that compared to where we were last year? So we don't get to the end of the year and realize like, oh, man, I'm not doing as well, or that expense kind of got away from me, or maybe the gross profit percentage isn't as much. So a lot of the business planning isn't just around tax focus. It's around business management and planning from that point to make sure we're running our business as efficiently and as profitable as we can.
I think it's such a unique thing that we bring to the table for small business owners, because like you said, it does very much feel like an island. I have shared our story many times with people that have said, well, how did you connect with William? He's in Larned. How did you guys start, you know, really this partnership with helping clients? And I said, it was a very, you know, organic situation in that we as small business owners felt like there's got to be some more advanced tax strategies and plannings and things that we are not experts in with business structure, things that we felt like we should be getting from a tax standpoint as business owners that led us to you. That relationship then, when somebody would say, hey, I'm looking for somebody that does XYZ, I would say, I've got a guy, you know, go talk to William and Caitlin. And that just evolved over the years. So I can speak from experience to say that it is very overwhelming when you're used to the W-2 world and you go to small business ownership. Ours started with real estate and rentals, and how do we really maximize the profitability? Is there a difference? Should we be an S corp? Should we be an LLC? What are the pros and cons to that? We bounced all kinds of ideas off of you, and we still do. And that's the kind of thing now that we collaborate on for all of our clients, to look at everybody's unique situation and make sure that there is not a hole in their financial life that we're not addressing. If there is something that feels like a question mark, we want to make sure we're talking through it and that people feel like they've got clarity.
Yeah. And there's a lot of nuance to tax law, business formation and management. We just try to still, with all my clients, still communicate of why we're doing this. I think that's important to go through. Not every little nuance they need to know, but like, hey, why are we having to kind of jump through these suits? Well, here's the law that drives that, and this is why it's to your benefit and working through. I feel really good. There was a guy this year that we had, a self-employed farmer, been doing it his way for a long, long, long time. And I was like, you know, I mean, I know the S-Corp's kind of a thing to kind of manage and get rolling, but we did. And in 1 year alone, this year, 1 year, we're talking 2025 alone, was $17,000 in tax savings. The difference between if we left it how it was versus what it is today, the same exact income, the same exact scenario. Yeah, there's some hoops to jump through to get that to set up. But and it's not for everybody. I mean, you've got to be, when you start an S-Corp or those things, you've got to make sure you're dialed. The bookkeeping's more critical, what you go through on there. And he really was committed. We kind of took a 2 year plan to say like, hey, this year we're going to pretend we're an S corp, get our books dialed how we are. If we feel we can do that, the next year we'll start that. And that piece was really awesome to see. And like, just to tell them this year there's a return. Hey, if we would have been the old scenario, you would have probably paid another $17,000 in tax. And so to see that savings is fun on our side, to kind of really feel like you're making a meaningful impact.
I agree. And from a financial advising standpoint, to be able to then play our part to say, what makes the most sense? If you've maximized all the expenses and you're accounting for all the things, like you said, that you're already paying for, then should we be maximizing a SEP IRA? Yep. Is there a simple IRA? Does a Roth versus traditional make sense based on your tax situation? Yep. That's where we really... I love to see the planning side of it come into play to say, here's money that you would have lost to taxes or to the IRS. And instead, we put a different structure in place. And this is how now you're building wealth and building the profitability of the business.
And what we want to, especially when you look at SEPs or those things, you look at self-employed or even individual retirement contributions, we don't want to be rushing the advisor to like open an account. Some of those things do take time. And people are surprised, like, oh, there are a lot of those retirements now. People are used to the IRAs that they could contribute after, but a lot you have to be formed and set up by December 31st. You can make a contribution later, but you have to have that done by December 31st. So if you're wanting to make some of those type of strategies, you got to make sure you're communicating that early, that I want to participate in some of those deals that are maybe a little bit lower limits, because SEP limits are massive, you know?
Right.
I mean, you can make contributions that are, I mean, most would be surprised of how much you can put into a SEP. You know, it's not, you're not looking at $7,500. It's 5x that plus, you know? So that's the important pieces, because there are deadlines in those for 1231. So if you want to use it for that calendar year, you still have to get those things implemented and put in place in advance. So that's communicating of where you feel you're at, working through on that side of what it looks like for you. And if there are businesses do fluctuate. There are years that are better or worse, especially when you look at IRAs or Roth contributions, there's AGI limitations. So some years I'm AGI, like, not that it banes us, but it stinks when somebody goes, oh yeah, I put into my Roth this year. Like, yeah, that ain't going to stay there very long. Yeah. Cause you're not eligible. You know? Yeah. So it's making sure that side of communication with the advisor too, and making sure that we go through, because we can take a reverse deal, but there is eligibility for Roth contributions and IRAs. And one of the things that we don't want to see, probably the worst in the industry, is if you end up with a non-deductible IRA. So you put into a traditional IRA, AGI was too high, so we don't get it deducted. It can stay there, but now we kind of have a mix between a Roth and a traditional, and it's just muddy. And why I mean it's muddy is there's a form called 8606. And basically every year you have to report how much of your, and when you start making withdrawals, you have to report how much of your account balance, what percentage of that was non-deductible versus deductible. And it's always like 1%. So let's say you take out 100 grand. Well, 1% of it isn't taxable. 99% is. Joe's old joke was 8606 is only good for one person, and that's the accountant, because he has to charge you every year to do this. So we just don't want to see it. You know, if you ended up in the non-deductible IRA, once you go to make withdrawals, every single year until that account is drawn to zero. You have to fill out that 8606, and it just creates a complication to return for no reason, and extra reporting, extra costs. So just being really communicative of where you are for the year, because the AGI limits on Roth and traditional IRA contributions aren't very high. You know, so if you're a self-employed individual thinking, oh yeah, I've always done that, well, the business starts to grow, well, you may not be eligible. And I like it when people invest monthly. It is better because I think it's easier to do the $500 a month for $6,000 at one time. But you also got to make sure of watching where your AGI and your income is going to be.
And well, we're talking about small business owners, but to be clear, you could be a W-2 employee. Mm-hmm. You could be or have access, for example, to a 401k through your work, go make your own IRA contribution, yep, thinking I'm going to go, you know, diversify. I'm going to go be smart. I'm going to make this $7,000 IRA contribution. You ended up making too much. You're covered by an employer plan. Now it's non-deductible. Yep. Now you've fallen into this reporting nightmare, so to speak, yeah, where if we would have done some pre-planning and would have all been on the same page throughout the year, yeah, we could have maybe given some different advice. So
yeah, I think that's what's way better, having where you guys are connected with us, so we can kind of go through when somebody says, hey, they're looking at making this contribution, what does that make sense or look like? Because it's weird, people get those W-2s, they don't look at them, but on the bottom there's a little thing that says retirement plan. If that box is checked, it grossly, yeah, changes your ability to deduct an IRA or not. And they're like, oh, yeah, I don't know. If you're covered by a retirement plan, it gets pretty tricky to be able to get into an IRA traditional. So having able to communicate when someone comes in and says, hey, I want to do this, you can say, well, hold on, let's look at your situation and see if it's eligible. Because there are a lot of little nuanced things. I remember 15 years ago when I started, and I guess now 16 years, when I started my career as a tax accountant, I thought, how do you ever know this information? Like, yeah, this is insane. I remember asking the guys that hired me, like, this is just, how do you know this? This is like, I asked them a question, boom, they just fire it off. And
yeah,
now as you get it, and you're in it all the time, you learn, you pick it up. But it's just something that on your own, it's just too dangerous. You know, yeah, if you don't have advisors, if you're trying to manage your own investments or do your own taxes, the combination of those splits, it's just so critical, especially self-employed individuals. No one should be trying to do it because of the way the depreciation rules are. It's just way too critical of what goes on there.
It's funny that you say that about how do you know this? We were just having a similar conversation as I'm training some new hires. And I remember 20 years ago thinking, well, this is ridiculous. Nobody, yeah, can ever know all there is to know about financial planning. You'd have, yeah, to be a rocket scientist. Yeah, and it, yeah, is really just experience, yeah, and it's experience, time. And it's, there's really no replacement for that. It, no, is having it played out and just living it every day. That would be so difficult to try to navigate. Just as a, you know, general person, you've got your own expertise in totally other areas, you know, yeah, and why would you be an expert in this? You wouldn't, you know, you're, yeah, not living it every day. So there are lots of gold mines in the tax code. There are lots, yeah, of landmines, right? Yeah, so it's, yeah, really knowing how to navigate both. Something I've heard, I don't know where, years ago was, you know, there's really two ways to make money. It's either people at work or money at work.
Yeah.
Those are the two things that we want to focus on. What are you impacting? How are you making money for yourself? And what are the things that we can adjust there? And then how is your money making money? And how do we adjust things there? And lots of, like you said, nuances that we want to help bring that together so people can make informed decisions.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of pieces to retirement. I remember early on in my career, one that probably broke my heart the most is a guy retired and he had a nice little 401k, worked his whole career. And he came in the next year and he had a 1099-R and it was a total distribution of his 401k.
Ooh.
And I thought, and he worked like through October, so had a pretty good W-2 still. I'm like, what did that? He goes, well, I retired. I thought I had to close out my retirement account. I'm like, no. Oh no. And we lost it was too late. Didn't communicate and go through. So you lost a significant portion of retirement. It was like 34% probably back then, right, you know, just off the top of what you had saved your entire life. And just not knowing, it was just not having that financial education to know, hey, you didn't have to. He just thought, well, I'm not, right, with that employer anymore. I got to take the money out. He told him to withdraw it all and he had it. He didn't spend, right, it, but you just took a heck of a haircut on the front end.
Yeah.
And took all that kind of pre-years of paying it at saving it at a higher rate. And then hopefully you could withdraw it slowly and pay at a lower rate. You just like paid it all at the higher rate. And then yeah, it was a little painful to go through. Those are ones that, gosh, that's probably been over 10 years ago.
You never forget it.
Yeah.
Never forget it.
Yeah. And he just didn't know. He goes, well, I thought I had a withdrawal and all.
Yeah.
I'm like, no. And then, and especially today, we see a lot with, I would say more on the 401k plans. There's not a lot of advising going on. Like when you're working for a pretty large employer or even ones that gets on a 401k, they get to some system and they're taking the money out of your check and matching it, but they're not really getting true advisory meetings. I don't know why that is the way the world it is, but you don't see, like, let's say like how Iron Horse Financial is, the advisors that are actually truly helping and going through, you don't see that in a lot of employer sponsored plans,
right?
You know? And so getting more, if I was advising a large employer or any employer, I'd say, hey, try to find an advisor that's willing to come and meet with your employees and set up an accounts with them. Because if you get to these large services, they're not, I kind of feel bad because the employees are saving, taking money out of their check, thinking that I'm saving enough for retirement. But we do a lot of payroll here in accounting, and it's not a lot of times too. You know, $25 out of your check, $25 match isn't going to get you very far into the retirement world. So you're going to have to work pretty long, pretty late in your career. If you want not to work those late years, you need to be working with an advisor about how much you're saving now today, how much you think you're going to spend in retirement, and then setting a goal and some marks. You know, I think we had a client the other day, and we were talking through, like, hey, this is the plan we're on, and trying to develop on both sides. One, the savings plan, and the next, the spending plan. It goes both together.
Yeah.
You know, and trying to figure out that piece. But a lot of times those large employers with the 401ks, they don't get any guidance. I mean, it's zero.
They don't. That's right. They don't. And it is a, I think it's a part of our industry, so to speak, that is very lacking. Mm-hmm. The other thing that is heartbreaking to me, similar to your story about the gentleman that's withdrawing, I see these people that have worked so hard to build these big nest eggs, and they don't have any advice in their 401k. So they keep investing like they have all the years when they were 20, 30, even 40. But you get within a couple years of retirement, if you've not made any adjustments and the market happens to take a dive, well, you don't have all those years in front of you to recover from that. You're either going to have to make a decision on, I'm working longer now to try to recover that, or I'm going to adjust the income that I'm able to generate for myself in retirement. Neither situation is ideal. Yeah. So one of the things
fast, you know, right. Take time. You know, I remember I graduated Washburn in 2010. That was 2 years post 08. And it was a really difficult hiring model because they're like, mm-hmm. well, so many people that plan to retire didn't because they lost 40%. So right. I remember trying to get a job, and I'd interviewed a couple different places before I got out here. And I was like, a guy with 10 years of experience is willing to work what you're going to work for. So I can't help but hire him. But he just had a stake. So he lost his retirement piece. And not being, if he would have been more protected at that side, knowing, hey, I'm within a couple of years of wanting to shut this thing down. I'm happy where I'm at. A big thing I always kind of discuss, especially when clients are getting older, is saying, do you feel you have enough to make it to, let's say, the end, to death, right? Yeah. They're like, yeah, I feel great. I don't have any financial concern. So what is the purpose of market risk?
Yeah.
Like, what is, I mean, if you just love it and you just decide you want to continue to try to make there, and there's been some really strong return here within the last 3 or 4 years, you know, you've seen double digits, like, man, they just love that. But I'm like, yeah, but can you, if you're good, right? If our whole goal was to work, save, and then get to a point where I don't have to worry about money the rest of my life, what's the purpose then at that point?
I think most advisors, even if you are getting advice, so let's say you're not just in a 401k where you're getting nothing, but even if you are getting advice, most advisors have a structure where they sell stocks, bonds, mutual funds. Yep. So that's the world they live in. They sell you funds. You acquire all these things that help you accumulate assets, but nobody focuses on distribution planning. Yep. How do we make the change from the accumulation phase of our financial life to the distribution phase? Because it's a totally different ballgame.
Yeah.
And if you're still working and you're within a couple of years of retirement, you should probably be checking to see, does your employer allow for an in-service distribution? An in-service distribution means, okay, I've built up this nest egg. I can keep working. I can keep my account open, but I can take out the bulk of it and get control of it in my own IRA, where it's actively managed, where I've got a distribution plan. I know how to make it most tax efficient. Yeah. I've got somebody that's protecting it against risk. Most people don't even know that that's a thing.
Yeah.
So
yeah, especially the 401k is probably the biggest you see, is that there's literally just this account. They're like, yeah, there's this I got to call this 1-800 number and hopefully there's someone. It's just, the quicker that I'm pretty bullish on, if you've got a 401k or something, there's something like we have state hospital here. So there's a 403b, you know, where the state's kind of managing that, getting that to just, I say, whoever you like, work with an advisor, find someone that can actually guide you with these funds, because they're generally not getting any communication or anything going through there. And that's what you want to kind of work through and make sure that you spend all this time. It takes a lifetime of good decisions to have financial security. That's what I'm a huge believer of that. And things have to go your way. You got to work hard. You got to have some things go your way, but don't waste that not using the resources in front of you. I think you do a great job too of understanding different products, annuities, life insurance. Those are other way bigger components. We always hyper focus on IRAs, 401ks, those pieces, but there's so many other layers and dynamics that go into there. And I think I'm always impressed you're super versed in those dynamics, especially annuity and life insurance. Like, those are critical pieces that I think people miss. I'm a big annuity believer for a lot of people because it helps them create a lot of security, because it's going to give you a guaranteed monthly payment. And I think when you get, and not for everything, you don't want to take every one of your dollar, but I think it's a big piece. We think a diversification of, I want to own Apple, Google, this, right? I don't want to own all the same person. That's what they're right. But there's also diversification of types of products that you want to own.
Yeah. And market risk.
Yep. Market risk, stages of life. I mean, there's just a lot of different pieces that you've got to review and go through that are really, really, really critical. And life insurance is a big piece of that, you know, and depending on what your family's at, what your age is at, you know, and going through. And some people realize, I had a client the other day, he's like, they were getting older and they got this life insurance policy that they've had. It's accumulated some value, but now it has some pretty significant costs to keep it going because they've crossed over into their 80s. So the dad was pretty funny because he was joking with the son, like, I think you're going to have to start paying these premiums. You know, he's like, I'm not seeing the benefit of this. I'm 80, you're 50, you know, like, but it has accumulated enough value. You'd like to keep it around, but it was just an interesting kind of piece to go through. But you don't think about, oh, I got this life insurance policy when I had young kids in the home and I'm paying this premium, and you keep paying it. And then you wake up and you go, well, my kids have kids. Like, is there a purpose for my life insurance anymore when you have these term type policies and extending term and looking through, but making sure you have a good advisor and reviewing those is important.
Yeah, it can get difficult, I think, to know the source of advice. So who is recommending these things to you? And you've got to take a step back to say, is the person that's recommending this benefiting more than I am? Yeah. There are really three sources of advice. There's insurance agents that work off commission. There are registered reps, which are selling mutual bonds, stocks, mutual funds, bonds, REITs, variable annuities, things that can lose money. But are sold for a commission, right? You've got to pay a commission up front. Yeah. And then there are investment advisors that are just really, you're paying for the holistic planning where you're not purchasing something from somebody. And that's how we're structured, where nobody's ever buying anything from us. We're not selling anything. It's how do we put a holistic and comprehensive plan together where they can figure out how each one of these vehicles maybe are most appropriate for them, or maybe they're not. So
I think tying, you know, your success as an investor should be tied in with your and guidance compensation, right? I do better, you do better, that's fine. But you're right. And sometimes you see those and people be like, hey, I put in 10,000 to this account and there's not 10,000 in there. I'm like, well,
what happened?
They took that commission up front. They're like, oh, that wasn't, you know, and then we've seen, you know, and just in times and scenarios when things are tighter and they're moving things around and you start paying that thing multiple times, that there has been legislative change. I think when Obama was in office, they did some change in the advisors, how that was done. But there was a period of time, if I took 10,000 and I invested it here, they took 5%, and then, oh, wait, well, maybe you want to be in this now. They take another 5%.
Yeah.
You know, and so I think that has changed, right? I think they changed where
somewhat. You can still churn counts a little bit, but they thankfully our industry is getting cleaned up a little bit. Yeah. One thing that we see a lot is kind of double dipping, we call it. You know, you're paying commissions and you're also paying fees. You're paying both. So you paid a commission to get into the fund and then they're hitting you with fees ongoing. Yeah. Maybe there's a back end fee. So you just have to be aware. I think transparency is key. Ask yourself who's benefiting. You know, if I make a decision here, and how does this play into my overall goals long term? It's one reason I think people are hugging me after meeting with you is they have clarity. They're not wondering why I'm doing something. They understand here's what the end result is for me. So yes, I'm on board with making these decisions. And I think that's so important. So a couple key things. If we had to say, okay, it's taxing over time, you think you're done, now is probably the time to recoup, look at what was filed, look at the end result. What are we doing on next year? What are some of the key takeaways in your mind for people to be thinking about right now?
I think a fun question to ask people is, what tax bracket are you in? And see if they know. Like, I mean, it'd be an interesting piece. You know, if our clients, so the benefit is with our return that we process back through, it goes through, it goes to return history. It's got the back piece. It shows an effective tax rate. So that's truly what matters. Tax divided by total income. That tells you what percentage. But it'd be interesting to know what people, I would just challenge that. People are watching the day like, if do you know the upper tax bracket that you're in? If you don't, if you're a client of ours, reach out. We'll communicate, kind of go through and know what's in your return, what kind of review, if you don't know that already. But if you don't, then ask yourself why you don't.
Mm-hmm. That's such a good point, because information allows you to make decisions moving forward. Yeah. Hard to make adjustments to anything if you don't know where you're currently at.
Yeah. Everyone assumes that this Joe was always a character, and he always said the fairest tax is what someone else pays. Everyone assumes they're paying too much tax, right? Yeah. Property tax, car tax, whatever it is, tax, it's too much. It's too high. But who knows? I mean, there are sometimes that we've had scenarios where clients have come in and we did some things and we're like, you know, I know this seems crazy, but we're at the 12% rate. I can't really honestly have, especially a small business owner, if it was a little leaner, if we're paying a 12% rate, I really don't want to use depreciation or deduction, let's say that we could use into the future, at a 12% rate. That's not working that strong for you effectively. And what we've seen, I think really we saw this year, we are at some of the more historical low levels of tax. Yeah. So do we want to hammer too far? So no understanding where that bracket falls, that not all of my income is subject to the high rates. Some are low rates. And if we start chipping away at the high rates, making sure we're not taking deductions in the low rates that are affecting our financial future. And that's why I was just a huge believer. Tax season is a hard focus and what we're here. But let's not chop our feet off to save right now. And then in the future, it's going to cost me a bunch.
I think my key takeaway would be that if you think you want to make adjustments, we probably need to start meeting this summer, right? Yeah. Like you said, there are some deadlines. And so if there are things that we want to get in place before year end, one, we need time to get things set up. You need time to be working with a tax professional. We need to not get together October and then say, okay, let's scramble and try to get these things in place for year end. We don't have from now until next April for a lot of things. We have end of year. Yeah. And it's so easy for the summer to get away. And now it's fall. Now we're scrambling.
Yeah. And especially when you look at, let's say you're looking at a W-4 withholding adjustment for a W-2 wage earner. Well, we're already a quarter through the year, actually almost four of the 12, we're almost a third now. So if you're under withheld and you would like to, hey man, I've been kind of owing, we're already behind right now. We're continuing to be under with it. Or if we're over withheld, well, now we got to readjust, you know. So that's those periods when we look at making adjustments, you also got to consider where you're at year to date. Just because we change your W-4 today, that's not going to get maybe the end result we need to, unless without smart planning, because we're already a quarter or a third through the year now in 4 days. So when we start getting that point and you're a third through, like you're right, it's amazing to watch. And we think, oh, tax time April 15th. Well, by the time that comes, we're a third through the year already. And now we're already getting, like, it every year it seems that the gap between the end of tax season and the beginning of tax season seems to get smaller.
Right.
You know, but
yes, for you, I'm sure that's definitely the case.
And it's good though. You know, I mean, we want to be communicative and busy all the time and trying to work through those pieces. I think we stay fresher and we're better on that side. And probably I'm more on my dad's side, that he was an engineer and believed as you get older, the years go by faster. And the reason that is it's a smaller percentage of your life. When you're one and you turn two, we've doubled our life.
Yeah.
But when you're 50 and turn 51, it's 2% of our life. You know, it's
whatever it is, the phenomenon is crazy.
Yeah.
Time goes faster.
Yeah. So he just believes that side of it. It's just a smaller percentage. You have so many more memories and experiences that the days and months. I mean, I go here, man, it's April 27th. That's kind of wild. Even post, like, I feel like what we've accomplished or done post April 15th, we've been busy, you know. So even just learning through that side and seeing how quick that moves. So don't let time get away from you. If you're thinking about it or you need some help, touch base with Jamie and your team, and we can get scheduled out there. I know we're going to be there, I think, next week. So because I got some appointments already set up, or the week after, it's like the 6th and 7th. So we'll be out there. So the 1st of May, we're going to be there. And then if we want to schedule, but we try to fill our days when we're there. So if you're interested in going through there, just kind of get on there. We'll get you put on the calendar. So,
yep. You can call our office. So the number is 620-377-6456. Let us know that you'd like to have a meeting. You can either start with a meeting with us or start with a meeting with William or Caitlin. Yep. Kind of depends on what the priority feels like, but overall, we don't ever charge anything for an initial consultation either side, which I think is important. We believe strongly that, you know, we want to make sure we can help you before we have any kind of relationship in place where we're talking about hiring, right? So that's a common question I get is, well, what does it cost? Well, just come in and have a conversation. We don't even know if we can help you yet, right? Yeah. That's where things start. So 620-377-6456. We're happy to set something up. And William, I can't thank you enough. It's always so informational to have you on. It's valuable, and we're going to have you back. So we'll give you a little breather here after tax time, but we're not going to let the hangover last forever.
It's better for us. I mean, we enjoy being at the office, which is thankful. So, and work through that. And a lot of times I think we've had some great, my favorite is we meet with them and then we take them down the hallway and they meet with you next. We can combo those times so we can make it productive for your time too. If you're coming in the McPherson area, or if you're in London and Jamie's over here, we want to make sure you can kind of meet both and go through that side. So.
Yeah, that's a good point. I'm in your office at least maybe, I don't know, once every 6 weeks or so. We try to make it that way, but we also love to fill our calendars and we're there just like you. So if anybody's listening and you're learned and you work with William or Caitlin, we're there also. So just that cohesive planning is what we're trying to bring to people. And we appreciate you. We appreciate everything that you do. And thank you everybody for listening. We will see you next time.
That wraps up another episode of the Fly on the Wall podcast. Join us next time as we continue the conversations and bringing you behind the scenes in the world of finance. And don't forget to stay connected with us on your favorite social media platforms and subscribe wherever you're listening to podcasts so you don't miss an episode. And we will see you next time.
All matters discussed during this show are for informational purposes only. Opinions expressed are solely those of Iron Horse Financial Services and staff. All topics covered are believed to be from reliable sources. However, Iron Horse Financial Services makes no representations as to its accuracy or completeness. This commercial shall in no way be construed as a solicitation to sell securities or advisory services to residents of any other state other than Kansas or otherwise permitted. Topics should be discussed with your financial advisor prior to implementation. Advisory services offered through Iron Horse Financial Services, a registered investment advisor in the state of Kansas. Insurance products and services are offered through Iron Horse Retirement, an affiliated company. Iron Horse Financial Services and Iron Horse Retirement are not affiliated with or endorsed by the Social Security Administration or any other government agency.